So welcome to Adelaide Chronicles, Bill.
Thank you.
And I'll just say that we're doing this recording on the land of the Kaurna people and here at Christie Walk, where I live. And I'm talking to Bill Cook, painter, artist, who writes poetry. And he's going to read some of his poems out now.
Hello. These are a collection of poems that I've written over a period of time. And they're not specifically, the reading isn't specifically about a group, it's a disparate group of poetry that I've got today. But the first poem I want to read is about my dad, who worked on as a waterside worker and also at one stage during the war drove a floating crane on Melbourne waterfront and around that area. And he was also a member of the Waterside Workers Union, got elected to the executive, and played a big part in setting up their credit union. So, you know, and he was their family philosopher in many ways. And poorly educated, but had a very good understanding about the human condition. So, you know, he was venerated in our family. It's called FMG, Francis Michael George, and his surname, of course, is the same as mine, Cook. FMG. I have the wounds you find in the chains of memory of him and of his time, ethereal dreamer, caught between skepticism and belief, the now to the ideal, that bridge and how it burned and burned again. I have the wounds you find in the chains of memory of him and of his time, afloat on Melbourne Harbour, his harbour, in that floating crane. Of six children, his House of Commons kitchen cabinet, working the joy of his words, working our imaginations, working the words from this ragged trousered philanthropist, words celebrated as tools, celebrated as defiance, as balms whispered in a child's dream. I have this memory of him, the only son from the first marriage who would not desert his twice deserted mother. Tissue paper skin and blue vein installed Sybil-like in a sumptuous floral lounge chair out of context in our battered, lime-green walled, sculptured laminex, chrome-chip kitchen. I have this memory of hard men and winos, nursery rhymes and the legends of Big Jim, turning our threadbare existence into a living wage, solidarity into a roof over our heads, and the three veg and a chop, tabled nightly without debate in our House of Commons. I have this memory of scabs not found on source, of credit unions as the working man's bank, and his half-inch stub of pencil working out compound interest for the interest of illiterate men on the backs of cigarette papers, his notepad rollies to note that old wolfies don't die. They just sling their hook. And then he did, leaving us pin-cut cushion numb and fragile in the immense, empty cathedral of his absence. I have this memory of the day we buried him, the day of the Wharfies National Strike. A kind of salute, we said, a kind of honour, we joked, a tribute. I have this memory of how we buried him in the Kadena Cemetery as he requested, in that unmarked grave, that double grave, with a man he never knew, his father. With this little trick of fate, we stood mute, our family history stretching back against swirling red dust and the panoramic horizon. It was then I caught him in a flashback, an aft image, him and his obstinate humanism, and I broke and I wept. So, that's about Dad, and a very much honoured man in our family tree. I would like to read you a piece about my sons. I have two sons, and I have three daughters. Mary and I have two sons and three daughters. Our boys were adopted, one from Thailand and one from South Korea. And of course, we've been with them all through some of the traumas that people have inflicted upon them. So this poem is called Two Sons. All my days have two suns, casting no shadows, they shine with unimagined rewards, and I bathe in the reflected light. Those who have eyes but no understanding prefix them with the word adopted, like it was a sentence, not simply a process, a mere formality, ceasing upon completion. Beyond question, they are my sons, as my daughters are my daughters. We are family. So, not surprisingly, we all have the same blood. It is red. It is red. What can I say after that? I think that poem is pretty self-explanatory. And my wife comes from the island of Ikaria, a remote island off the coast of Turkey, pretty close to the Turkey. You can see it on a clear day. And but it's a Greek island. And spending much time there, I just loved some of the images I took from there, or of seeing. There is something about the inadvertent juxtaposition of colour, the silent awe of seeing, the accident of existence locked in the passing of the everyday, the commonplace that melts into your eyes as the taken for granted fall of light on the normal sun yellow wall leaves you breathless. The shock of blue, elongated shadows on slivers of crisp white buildings with a strangle of scarlet piping set against a threatening cerulean sky. To see it knowingly is to absorb it through every socket and pore of your skin while being lifted live from the suburban tyranny of grey, still clutching a piece of the puzzle that a blink could have missed. The last one is deadly serious but a bit lighter. It's going back also to the island of Ikaria, that my wife came from. And when my parents visited there in 1975, there was hardly any bitumen, and I think they had their first butcher shop by then, and it's basically an island that is the top of a sunken mountain range that sticks above the sea. It's 45 kilometres long by about 10 kilometres wide, and these are resilient people who live there, and so they get by, they make out, and they keep going. In classical times, it was considered the place to be sent if you were a bit of a nuisance back in Athens, and has been continuously used as a prison on those sorts of occasions, and right up to the Civil War. And it includes a number of very famous poets and writers and conductors, and all imprisoned there because they could be kept there easily with one boat just sailing around the island, and you couldn't get up. And they put some people there during the Civil War in the hope that they would starve. And they put 10,000 people there actually. And the people on the island took them in. So when you go there, it is not unknown that they would point in the direction of Athens and tell you that whatever's going on over there is completely wrong. And they are very independent about that sort of thing. But this is a story about their roads, which came as a shock to the city boy. I'll start. The road. They said there was a road from Aios to Plakia. They said, with all Icarian sincerity, there was a road. A road from Aios to Plakia. But this thing is not a road. This thing, twisted, convoluted, and evasive as an Icarian answer. This thing is not a road. This thing, 300 metres high, sheared rock into nothingness. This thing, peripheral reasoning on the edge of nowhere. This thing, a heartbeat of goat tracks. This thing, a treacherous smile, a U-shaped skid of gravel. This thing, curves of adrenaline dressed in white Sunday best crosses. This thing, hairpin bend snapshots of the ocean far below. This thing sits above the ocean, or far below. The ocean sits and waits. So there's four of my poems. And
have you driven on that road?
Yes, with my heart beating like crazy, and my sister-in-law sitting in the back, and Mary, my wife, without faltering, kept a continuous conversation between each other and didn't notice a single thing because they hadn't seen each other for quite some years, because the older sister lives on the island. So while I was desperately worried that we were going to go over the edge, because places where they had no guardrails like we have here, right? So it just ran along the edge of this cliff. And on the edge, where people had gone over, there was a little icon where they had a little symbol with a white
to
cross
remember them.
And a candle, in a light inside it. So there might be six of them on the worst corner. And the further around you go, there might be three more around that one too. So I noticed all of these things. The conversation in the back seat never abated, only to suck in their breath. That was about it. After that, I swore I would never drive on that road ever again. All right? And many of the roads don't have guardrails. And they now have a few bitumen roads there, and they do have guardrails. But during the storms and so on, you can be driving on those roads, and the guardrail goes out into space, it comes back on joins where there's been a slide down the mountain. So you've got to be a bit careful. Keep your eye off the guardrail, keep your eye on the road. So
that's fantastic. Have you got a picture of that road?
I've actually drawn a picture of it.